listening to Preston FM 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
And do you think paganism, though, in some way, the principles of paganism, which has obviously a direct correlation between ourselves, Mother Nature, the world, as it were, it's very holistic, isn't it? It's all to do.
Yeah, but you see, the problem is...
There's been a separation then, hasn't it, from that?
Yeah, it's gone from the matriarchal to the patriarchal. So it's gone from...
The mother birthing,
birth of food, you know, not just the birth of children, but the birth of an idea and the universe and everything. The early sort of belief systems believed in both the patriarch and the matriarch.
Yeah.
Because when you look at the Egyptian system, it does come down the female line.
Yeah.
Even though the pharaoh is the ruler, he's the connection between the people and the god.
Osiris and Isis. So Isis being the feminine deity.
Yeah.
And Osiris.
Well,
being...
I mean, the ordinary people, the pharaoh, is the connection between Osiris and Isis and the people. He's the speaker for the people.
Yeah.
So it's patriarchal in that sense.
Yeah.
But it's matriarchal in the sense that the throne can still go down the female side.
Yep.
And in paganism, it's the same thing. Worship, if you like, both male and female entities. So it's a combination, and it's a true an androgynous system rather than being one swayed one way or the other. And everything's too patriarchal at the moment, isn't it? Because it's Armageddon. It's all very manly and technology and who's got the fastest car and whatever else, you know.
And to do with control.
Control, yeah.
So therefore what man has inherently done, whereas, as you say, because the feminine aspect of our species, which essentially we're all feminine, seeing before the first 6 or 7 weeks, everything starts as a with feminine genitalia and everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's only because of the man's seed, whether it's an XX, XY, whether or not it then becomes a male or remains a female. But essentially, by us, this male, predominantly male-dominated society that we've lived in, and religions and politics and kings and all the rest of it, that has had an adverse effect, you believe, upon... we as a people upon this earth, and taking us away from our natural sort of way of being with the organism.
To a certain extent, yeah, I do. Yeah.
And is that something to do with the fact that... because essentially, although women, as you say, where we have the seed and the spring, and then with everything grows, and then we have a harvest, like a birth, you know, women have that sort of... you have the eggs, you have, and it can grow within you to give birth. And so
without the seed, the egg's no good, is it?
Correct, exactly.
So it's a conjoining of, it's both.
But there is this predominantly male thing of wanting to...
Well, the male thing is they've got to spread their seed around as many places as they possibly can.
Yeah.
It's like blue tits, they'll have about 3 or 4 nests going in spring, you know.
Yeah.
It's a bit like that, isn't it?
Well, in order for the survival of the fittest, or to...
I think it's just to do with something that's in a male instinct to reproduce.
Yeah.
Or bring forth reproduction, if you like.
Reproduction, not
to
just...
In a human sense, it's to sow the seed so that he's got his next generation, isn't it? Like, when you go back a few hundred years and it was like the very rich and the very poor, it was one extreme to the other, without the middle class all... you know, you'd get the squire having sex with the scullery maid because his wife was barren or something, and she'd end up pregnant. Then he'd say, "Oh, I'm the father," and take the child off the woman, and that's his offspring.
His genetics.
You know what I mean? It's like, I think that's just an animalistic thing.
Yeah.
He's got the power, she's got the need, as Alice Cooper would say, you know.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Georgina, for this interview. It's been most interesting. Everyone, it's that time again. It's exactly 5:15.
The fact of the matter is, there are numerous saviors from different periods from all over the world which subscribe to these general characteristics. The question remains, why these attributes? Why the virgin birth on December 25th? Why dead for 3 days in the inevitable resurrection? Why 12 disciples or followers? To find out, let's examine the most recent of the solar messiahs. Jesus Christ was born of the Virgin Mary on December 25th in Bethlehem. His birth was announced by a star in the east, which three kings or magi followed to locate and adorn the new Savior. He was a child teacher at 12, and at the age of 30, he was baptized by John the Baptist, and thus began his ministry. Jesus had 12 disciples, which he traveled about with, performing miracles, such as healing the sick, walking on water, raising the dead. He was also known as the King of Kings, the Son of God, the Light of the World, the Alpha and Omega, the Lamb of God, and many, many others. After being betrayed by his disciple Judas and sold for 30 pieces of silver, he was crucified, placed in a tomb, and after 3 days was resurrected and ascended into heaven. First of all, the birth sequence is completely astrological. The star in the east is Sirius, the brightest star in the night sky, which, on December 24th, aligns with the three brightest stars in Orion's belt. These three bright stars in Orion's belt are called today what they were called in ancient times, the Three Kings. And the Three Kings and the brightest star, Sirius, all point to the place of the sunrise on December 25th. This is why the Three Kings follow the star in the east, in order to locate the sunrise, the birth of the sun. The Virgin Mary is the constellation Virgo, also known as Virgo the Virgin. Virgo in Latin means virgin. The ancient glyph for Virgo is the altered M. This is why Mary, along with other virgin mothers, such as Adonis's mother Myra or Buddha's mother Maya, begin with an M. Virgo is also referred to as the house of bread, and the representation of Virgo is a virgin holding a sheaf of wheat. This house of bread and its symbol of wheat represents August and September, the time of harvest, In turn, Bethlehem, in fact, literally translates to house of bread. Bethlehem is thus a reference to the constellation Virgo, a place in the sky, not on earth. There's another very interesting phenomenon that occurs around December 25th, or the winter solstice. From the summer solstice to the winter solstice, the days become shorter and colder. And from the perspective of the northern hemisphere, the sun appears to move south and get smaller and more scarce. The shortening of the days and the expiration of the crops when approaching the winter solstice symbolize the process of death to the ancients. It was the death of the sun. And by December 22nd, the sun's demise was fully realized. For the sun, having moved south continually for 6 months, makes it to its lowest point in the sky. Here a curious thing occurs. The sun stops moving south, at least perceivably, for 3 days. And during this 3-day pause, the sun resides in the vicinity of the Southern Cross, or Crux, constellation. And after this time, on December 25th, the sun moves 1 degree, this time north, foreshadowing longer days, warmth, and spring. And thus it was said, the sun died on the cross, was dead for 3 days, only to be resurrected or born again. This is why Jesus and numerous other sun gods share the crucifixion, 3-day death, and resurrection concept. It is the sun's transition period before it shifts its direction back into the northern hemisphere, bringing spring and thus salvation. However, they did not celebrate the resurrection of the sun until the spring equinox, or Easter. This is because at the spring equinox, the sun officially overpowers the evil darkness, as daytime thereafter becomes longer in duration than the night, and the revitalizing conditions of spring emerge.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2, the voice of the people.
I used to think we evolved from apes. Darwin's theory of evolution through natural selection seemed pretty watertight. But in doing research for this show, I came across a theory that deviates from Darwin's, and I believe that. I just found it in a dusty old book in a library. It's called The Bible. And Darwin was wrong. We didn't evolve. God made us. So I just want to explain to you exactly how that happened. Okay. The first book of Moses, commonly called Genesis. Start at the beginning. Fairly big book, but Friday, innit? Lock the doors. Some of the things you'll hear do sound a little bit far-fetched. I admit that. I thought it was a bit. But then I found out that the other name for the Bible is the Gospel. So it is all true. So, luckily, clue is in the title. Okay. Come on. It's the Bible. Okay. Chapter 1. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. It doesn't go into detail. He doesn't need to explain to you. You probably understand it because he's got a massive brain. Yours is little. And you go, what? He goes, don't. What? Just trust me. I did. And also, if he explained it to you, it would like ruin the enigma. Do you know what I mean? You go, that's amazing. He just says, it's a trick. And you go, oh. So it's like seeing. No, it's like if David Blaine did something. And you go, oh, that is real magic. And you go, no, I'm just standing on one leg and lifting the other up. Easy. So. Keeps his cards very close to his chest. God, good luck to him. He can do what he wants. He can do anything, so he can do what he wants. Okay, here we go. In the beginning, God created the earth. And the earth was without form and void, and darkness was on the face of the deep. Bit dark, he sorted that out. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. Huh? Isn't that brilliant? Hey? Oh, come on, that's amazing. He made light up. Just it was dark. It was nothing before. It's not like he saw someone on holiday and went, that'll be good back on Earth. He made it up. Do you not? You're
He invented. There was no. There was nothing to go by. It wasn't like there was twilight and he went, let's have that a little bit brighter. He just went, let there be light. And at the speed of light, he didn't go, let there be light. Come on, I'm busy. It's the first day. I've got a lot to do. I've only got 7 days. It just, do you know what I mean? And he probably didn't have to say it. He did say it, but he could have gone, that's exactly what I was thinking of. Brilliant. Come on, he's amazing. What are you? Free your minds. Listen, right, OK. So he did the light, invented it. Which means that he created the heaven and the earth in the dark. Fucking how good is that? I'd have gone, right, let's have a little bit of light on this watch, let's see what we're doing, right. I need some planets. He went, that's everything, let's have a look, brilliant. And God saw the light and saw that it was good. Even though he says so himself. it is good, but just if there's pride in your work, then there's arrogance.
You're listening to Preston FM 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
Well, hi everyone. This is the voice of the people on Preston 103.2 FM. Today is Monday, the 22nd of February, and I am with Kelsang Pagpa at the Vajra Virari Buddhist Centre in Westcliff in Preston. Did I say that
right? Yeah, you did that really well.
Are you sure?
Most people get that right.
Vajra Virari.
Yeah, brilliant.
Buddhist Centre in Westcliff in Preston. Pagpa is the residential teacher at the centre, which is also a residential college for Buddhist practice. Mm-hmm. That's correct, Pagpa, yeah?
Yep.
Hi, Pagpa.
Hi, nice how you doing, Paul?
I'm fine.
It's good to see you today.
Seeing the, as I'm sat here with you, this is the meditation, one of the meditations.
Yes, it is. Mm-hmm.
And this fantastic sunlight is bursting through, as it were.
It's a beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day. Can you tell me, because you've been on Westcliff for a number of years now.
Yeah.
You were at a building further down, were you?
Yeah, we used to be at 66 and now we're at 38.
Right.
So we just moved down the street about 7 years ago.
Right. And so how long has the actual Buddhist centre been in Preston then?
It started about 1981. There was a group of people in Preston who were interested in getting some Buddhist teachings, and there's a centre in Ulverston in the Lake District called Manjushri Centre.
Yeah.
And they asked for a teacher to come down from there. He used to come down every week and give teachings at the Quakers Meeting House, Friends Meeting House in
St. George's. Right.
Yeah. So that happened for a while, and then our teacher, Geshe Kelsang Gyatso, he decided it was good idea to start a centre, so he encouraged people to do that.
Right.
And then he sent a teacher and a Buddha, and they found a house for both of them.
Right.
In Deepdale. That's where it started, in Deepdale Road.
Oh, on Deepdale Road?
Yeah, number 38.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, opposite the what used to be the Hollywood Bar.
Oh,
not the most easy place to meditate.
Right.
Especially on a Saturday night.
I know where it is. The County Arms pub was at the bottom.
Yeah.
Prison. Yeah, that's the road, isn't it?
That's right.
That's still 81. Where are we now? 20, 30. So it was about 28.
29. Over 30 years, yeah.
Right, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So then you came here, uh-huh. And you had the first building on Westcliff, didn't you?
Yeah, that was the second centre after the Deepdale one.
That was a beautiful building.
That was great, yeah.
Wasn't it a lovely atmosphere?
It was. It was a bit small, though. It was homely, but it was too much like somebody's home. It needed to be more of a public space.
Right, which is the reason why you... And this used to be part of the post office, this building?
Yeah, it was a post office administration centre.
Right.
Yeah, and we took it over in 2002.
So I suppose with the development of it since 1981, and, you know, as it's grown, so it's now no longer just a place in order for people to meet and practice Buddhism. You needed greater room and space in order, because this is now like a college, isn't it, for people to study?
That's right, and it's residential, so we have people living here. But also, Our main thing is that we want to help people to find inner peace through meditation.
Right.
So it isn't just for Buddhists.
Yeah.
We didn't want the centre to be like a small clique
right.
of Buddhists. We
closed
wanted
off.
To yeah. closed off and inaccessible to the public.
Yeah.
We wanted to open it up and have it for everybody. I mean, one of our slogans is like, everyone welcome.
Right.
Because that's what we want. We want everybody to feel they can come and learn what we have to teach and that they can apply it no matter what belief system they have
right.
or no belief.
Yeah.
Even atheists could benefit from.
You're listening to Preston FM 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
You wouldn't say Buddhism then is a religion, is it? Is it?
I would, actually.
You would say that?
Yeah. Depends how you define religion. If you believe religion as belief in a god, then I would say no. Because Buddhism doesn't accept the idea of a supreme creator other than the mind.
Yeah.
So, but I would say that religion, it is a religion because we do pray. We pray to Buddha.
Yeah.
But in a different way than people pray to God, I think.
Yeah.
Because we don't believe that Buddha can just solve all of our problems for us. We believe that our prayer really is for Buddha to bless us and to guide us and to teach us so that we can become like him.
Yeah.
Whereas in Christianity, you can't become God.
Yeah.
In Buddhism, you can become Buddha. So that's the main difference, through developing your own mind.
Yeah.
And experiencing more and more inner peace.
I suppose it is. It's in the truest sense of the word. You're trying to bring things together in some, you know, under some principle of, as it were, understanding, under knowledge, love.
It's knowledge of the mind. And we believe that knowledge of your own mind unlocks everything for you.
Yeah.
It helps you discover the true purpose of life, which is to love others and to become a pure being so that you can help everybody.
Yeah. But essentially, that's also the message of all the other religions, isn't it? I mean,
sure.
You know, it's the interpretation of, isn't it, I suppose, that can cause this division and separation which we see prevalent in the world today, isn't it?
I think we're very good at focusing on difference, aren't we? And then exaggerating those differences so that we feel completely alienated and disconnected from people, which is horrible,
really.
Is
something part of the human condition? Or?
It's part of the human condition. It's part of our ignorance, I think, that we do that.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, in Buddhism we say that all living beings have two things in common. Yeah. We all want to be happy.
Yeah.
And we all want to be free from suffering.
Yeah.
And that unites all of us.
Yeah.
There isn't any single living being, even a tiny ant,
that
doesn't fall into that category. So why focus on difference when it just creates division and anger, discrimination, wars?
Yeah.
It doesn't really help.
Yeah. But even in, as we mentioned earlier, even within, we mentioned that Buddhism itself, so Buddha, it was about the 6th century, wasn't it? About 600 BC, before Jesus Christ.
Yeah, 624 BC he was born.
Yeah.
In a place called Lumbini.
Right.
Which is now in Nepal, but it was in northern India at that time.
Yeah, born from a very wealthy family.
Yes, his father was a king called Suddhodana, King Suddhodana.
Yeah.
And his mother was called Queen Maya Devi.
Yeah.
And he was born as a prince, and he was expected to grow up and be just like his father and take over
tried
the
to keep him,
kingdom.
Didn't they?
Yeah.
From suffering.
That's right.
Didn't they? It wasn't until he was about, was it 16 or 17, that he managed to put some pauper's clothes, servant's clothes on and get outside the...
Yeah, he went outside and he saw four
poverty.
Things.
Oh, right, sorry.
That completely changed his life.
Yeah.
You know, he saw a sick person.
Yeah.
He saw an old person.
Yeah.
He saw a corpse.
Yeah.
And he saw a religious mendicant.
Yeah.
And so he began to think about suffering.
Yeah.
And that began to change him, that he realised that he couldn't carry on living this luxurious, privileged life in a palace while everybody was suffering, and he wanted to find some answers.
Yeah. And that's where he went under the Bodhi tree, as it were, for 6 years and
meditated and said, I'm not leaving. Very patient man, obviously.
Very patient, yes.
But he said, until I, as it were, he must have had many trials and tribulations. And
that was a culmination of a process that started when his dissatisfaction with being in the palace and wanting to find a solution to human problems.
Yeah.
So he went on a spiritual quest.
Yeah.
And he visited many of the great meditation teachers of that day and asked them to teach him.
Yeah.
And they taught him everything he knew, and he surpassed his own teachers.
Right.
But he still didn't find the answers that he was looking for. So eventually he began to go more and more into his own mind and realise things about the mind.
Yeah.
He realised about past and future lives, reincarnation, karma.
Yeah.
And he especially realised that all happiness and suffering come from within.
Yeah.
That it's not what people say and do, it's not the situations that we find ourselves in, but
yeah.
the cause of our problems so much as the way we look at things
yeah.
and what we think about things.
Our attitudes.
And how we act, our yeah. attitudes and our actions,
yeah.
which come from our states of mind.
Precious Lord, take my hand, lead me on, let me stand. I am tired, I am weak, I am worn. Through the storm, through the night, lead me on to life. Take my hand, precious Lord, lead me home. When my way grows gray, precious Lord, linger near. When my life is almost gone, hear my cry, hear my call, hold my hand lest I fall.
Because, I mean, it's very interesting analogy, isn't it? Because he's born, as it were, in this beautiful world.
Mm.
This beautiful, because he was born into sort of in royal. He was like a royal bloodline, wasn't it? So I mean, it was all of, he must have thought that the universe and life and everything is this sort of perfect, nirvanic sort of bliss.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden, he's then shown another aspect of existence. And now he could have, like, I suppose a lot of people would think, oh, well, I don't like that, I need to go back over here. And it must have struck... It would have struck a chord within him, which was always in him anyway, I suppose, of this thing about compassion, isn't it? Because if he didn't have compassion, then even though he would have seen those four things, you know, he would have then thought, interesting, and maybe gone back to his other life.
Yeah.
You know, and detached himself, as it were, from the concerns of others,
yes.
Which of course he didn't do. So this essential, this compassion is a very important aspect.
That's totally
isn't it?
Key, absolutely.
Right.
I mean, we believe that compassion is the seed of our enlightenment.
Right.
Because the reason why you want to become enlightened like Buddha is because you see all this suffering in the world and you can't bear for people to suffer.
Yeah.
Because you care and you want to help.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you know that essentially seeing everything is energy, you're... Because it comes back to this, not only do we divide things with respect to, you know, how we think and our language, and but we feel in some way that we are divided from this, almost like this quantum energy field. And of course we're not. We're an essential, scientifically, an essential sort of interconnected part of the whole, aren't we? So therefore
Absolutely.
We should be concerned, if we're concerned about ourselves, then we must also be concerned with everything around ourselves and how we treat that.
Well, yeah, that's a really interesting point, Paul, because, you know, we do believe that we can find happiness for ourselves.
Yeah.
And disregard everybody else's happiness.
Yeah.
But because we're so interconnected,
yeah,
there's no way I can make myself happy by ignoring you.
Yeah.
So the way to make yourself happy is to realise that we're all part of one human family, as yeah, it were, and or even just as living beings, we care for animals and insects and birds and so on, yeah, as well. Every single form of life has a wish to be happy and free from suffering.
Absolutely.
And we have to service that wish ourselves, yeah, in order to find the true meaning of our life.
Yeah.
It's about abandoning selfishness.
Yeah.
And working to help others.
Which is very difficult, though, isn't it?
Oh, sure.
To, you know, this sort of... because of the nature of consciousness, you know, there is this... you're over there.
Yeah.
And I'm over here.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah,
there's three-dimensional space between the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
And even though me and you... we could talk, I mean, me and you, we could talk for hours, couldn't we, about this?
But definitely.
For the radio show, I mean, we'll do certain things. But, I mean, essentially, it is sort of... and I remember Robin saying on the last show, sometimes I think that's why meditation is so important. Because in order to truly understand and sort of transcend that separation and that... sort of the natural phenomena of I'm over here in my consciousness and you're over there in yours,
mm,
really, it can't be done by intellectual discourse. You can, the closer you're going to get to it is in silence, isn't it? And in meditation, you can then feel that sort of, you can feel the connectedness of between
absolutely
each other, can't you?
Absolutely, yeah, you're right. It's about realizing the truth through meditation.
Yeah.
Not just through discussion or study.
Yeah.
But through meditating on these truths.
Yeah.
And that's what Buddha did.
Yeah.
So we're just following the path of realization.
Yeah.
That he taught.
You're listening to Preston FM on 103.2. The voice of the people.
There is a foundation of principles, isn't there?
Uh-huh.
Like there is in the Old Testament with the Ten Commandments, or, you know, and then the principles of, I suppose, of Jesus Christ, the Sermon on the Mount, or the Quran, or whatever. There are these fundamental principles that are the framework of the house, as it were.
Yes.
Or the building, or the temple. Of this, so we, although we know that the to truly understand and connect with the whole, mm-hmm, so we don't feel separated, that is through silence and meditation.
Mm-hmm.
But that silence and meditation is actually based upon a set of very sort of very simple and very profound principles, aren't they?
Yes, it's basically the Four Noble Truths.
All right,
that's the fundamental of what Buddha taught. So these basically. They're called true because they are truths.
These are the foundation stones.
These are the foundation stones of Buddhism. So four, yeah, things, really. The first one is called true suffering. And what Buddha is saying is the nature of our life is one of suffering,
yeah,
which can seem depressing to people. But what he's saying basically is life is dissatisfying, that no matter how hard we try through our enjoyments, hobbies, interests, families and so on to find happiness... all the happiness that we experience is short-lived. It's a happiness that's derived mainly from searching for material gain. You know, we live in a very materialistic society, and we believe that the things that you own are the things that are valuable.
Mm.
And they define you as a person, they give you status,
yep,
and they give you credibility and your good reputation and everything.
Yep.
And we strive to attain, you know, the perfect partner,
mm-hmm,
the perfect house, the perfect job,
car,
the perfect car, the perfect place to live. We're trying to find all these perfect things in an imperfect world.
Yeah.
And that's just not possible.
Mm.
So because of that, we experience fundamental suffering, such as the suffering of being born.
Yeah.
The suffering of having to live, to grow old, to get sick and to die.
Yeah.
And then to repeat the process over and over again through reincarnation, to have to go through these sufferings,
yeah,
life after life. So Buddha said, because of that, then that's the nature of our life, that we need to put an end to suffering.
Yeah.
He then asked, well, where do these sufferings come from? And the answer is true origins. So he says that these are basically actions that we perform out of delusion.
Yeah.
So delusions are distorted states of mind like anger, attachment, jealousy, pride,
yeah.
all of which are underpinned by selfishness.
Yeah.
And that whenever we have these minds, we act to harm our others and to harm ourselves.
Yeah.
We create karma or actions,
yeah.
which then throws us back into this cycle of suffering rebirth over and over again.
Yeah.
So we need to escape. The way we escape is by following, attaining a final cessation of all delusions and faults in the mind, which we call true cessation.
Yeah.
And the way to do that is by following a path which is called, in some parts of Buddhism, we call it the Eightfold Path.
Yeah.
And it's also called the Three Higher Trainings, or it can be called the Path to Enlightenment, the Six Perfections.
Yeah.
The path of the Bodhisattva, or someone who's trying to attain enlightenment. So by following a path, which is like an inner process of development of our mind, the development of our human qualities like love, compassion, patience, wisdom,
yeah.
faith,
yeah.
and the elimination of faults, which yeah. are selfish traits, then eventually we'll attain a state of perfection.
Which is this interconnectedness with the whole, isn't it?
Yeah, it's like we will attain a mind which can perceive everything throughout the universe, past, present and future,
yeah.
and that feels interconnected with all
time and space in some way disappears.
It seemed to be a construct of the mind.
Yeah.
And
depending on what level of learning or gnosis, as we call it, knowledge we're at.
That's right.
Yeah, so they're the... They're the fundamental building blocks, aren't they?
Yeah, those basically we've got two problems and two solutions.
Yeah.
The problems are sufferings and origins.
Yeah.
And the solution is cessations and paths.
Right, and they're all essentially to do with consciousness and mind.
Absolutely. And right. we can take all of Buddha's teachings and put them into there.
Right.
Into those four. It becomes, you eliminate ignorance, which is the fundamental problem that we have, our not understanding how things exist.
Yeah.
So it's what you were saying about our separateness.
Yeah.
You know, ignorance compartmentalizes things,
yeah.
breaks them up into parts, and then feels those parts are separate
yeah.
and not part of the whole.
It's almost like in parallel with our species, there's been this wonderful human beings that have existed throughout time that have tried to give us this other beautiful, beautiful knowledge. Mm. But then, and then we, you know, as a species as well, we've had to, as it were, evolve upon this earth with all our sort of trials and tribulations and suffering.
Sure.
Through, you know, through many, many different civilizations that have come and gone. The Industrial Revolution, now we're in this technological world, now there's 6.5 billion of us upon the planet. Do you see us as a species be going more towards division and separate, or can you see a time where people, there's going to be like a new awakening in some way?
I think we're going more towards division.
Right.
Sadly, the number of wars in this world bear that out.
Right.
We're losing the facts of our common humanity.
Right.
Like when you have two groups of people, you can call them Israeli and Palestinians, for example. You yep. think they're failing to recognise each other's common reality and right to exist. Mm. You know, common humanity,
as a
common
values. Fact.
Yeah. Yeah. If they both respected each other and respected each other's happiness,
yeah,
then they could solve those problems.
Yeah.
They would both recognise that they both have a right to land.
Yeah.
They both have a right to live a free life.
And
without
to breathe.
Oppression, to yeah. breathe without fear of military reprisals or whatever.
Yeah.
And they could live in harmony with each other, but that isn't going to happen because of this, you know, as soon as you have two names, Palestinian and Israeli,
yeah.
it's almost like you could be talking about two different species from two different planets almost.
Yeah.
That people grasp at those differences
yeah.
and they believe those differences to be true.
Yeah.
And that then creates hatred and division.
Which, I mean, when we talked about earlier as well, this sort of tendency of our species to do that,
yeah.
and we've done it throughout human history, including in Buddhism, there are different parts of Buddhism, isn't there?
Sure.
This, I mean, we talked about before about Mahayana, the great vehicle.
Yes.
That's one way and one path, as it were, within Buddhism. But then you also have the Hinayana,
yes,
or as they prefer to be called, the Theravada.
Yes, that's right.
The elders.
Yeah.
The whereas me and you both sat, and you explained to me earlier, which well we'll do it in a minute, but you explained to me what the differences were.
Yeah.
I said, well, that's fantastic. Then we can have then we can have both.
Yeah.
In fact, if there was four, but essentially it all comes back to the fundamental foundation stones of the philosophy of Gautama Buddha.
Yes.
That isn't, once again, whereas me and you can see that diversity, you know, and having our different roles to play within life is something to be celebrated, not to be divided or separate and stop and have conflict. There is conflict within the Buddhists of faith itself, isn't it? By different people
yeah,
thinking.
Yeah, from that point of view, of the Theravadins saying, you know, we have the original Buddhism and this is correct.
Yeah.
Everything that Buddha, that you're now calling the Mahayana path,
yeah.
was invented after Buddha passed away.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Mahayanists who are saying to the Theravadins, well, you don't have a complete path in a sense, or, you know, your aims are lesser than ours.
Yeah. Is that what they're saying?
Not really. I mean, different people have different capacities for yep. spiritual practice, and there's some higher and some lower.
Yeah.
But because you haven't got the karma or...
Well, it's to do with intelligence, isn't it?
It could be to do with intelligence or wisdom or intention.
Yeah.
Or spiritual capacity.
Yeah.
Not everybody's the same. And I think you're right. I think we should recognise those differences and celebrate them
mm.
and not have them to be a cause of hatred and division.
Yeah.
Why can't we respect difference? Why can't we say, you're different from me, I recognise that, and you have a perfect right to be different.
Yeah.
And I rejoice and support your right
yeah.
to be different.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because if nature teaches us anything, there isn't one tree, even though they're all called trees, there's many different types of tree.
Of course.
But we all put them under the word tree. You know, at the end of the day, if people personally, in their own personal way, want to take or choose certain aspects of Buddhism, and then they need to do this and that. Essentially, if that gives them the guidance in order to live their lives in positive, creative, loving action,
mm-hmm.
then do it.
Absolutely.
Because that's the essential thing, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I think human beings get so confused and so caught up in the details of things that they totally miss the point.
You know? I mean, when I look at Christians, I think to myself, well, you guys, you believe some of the things I believe. You don't believe some of the things I believe. That's fine.
Yep.
But when I see people who have faith and they have love and compassion and they're working to help others,
yep.
I rejoice. I think that's fantastic.
Yeah, and they may even be
atheists. They don't have to call themselves Buddhists. They
don't have to call themselves anything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's that fundamental love and compassion which underlies all religions.
Yeah.
That we should recognise that commonality and rejoice in it.
Yeah. Even if, which of course is the difficult thing, your neighbour, or be that a country, or the person beside you in a different house, or on the street, or whatever, even if they don't get it themselves, you must still do that. You must still, as an example, try and have understanding and loving and compassion for that person. And that's really what we need more human beings to do, don't we? We need more human beings to try and be understanding, loving and compassionate.
Mm.
To others,
mm-hmm.
even if it's not reciprocated.
Absolutely, yes.
I mean, that's the really difficult one, isn't it? And I think there is a lot of, I don't know, so many people, I mean, there's a lot of apathy and they think it's futile. They think it's a waste of time. It's sort of, it's gone too far now. You know, there's a lot of anger and almost hate, almost, for ourselves as a species. We look at what we've done to the world, we look at what we've done to all the other creatures and species, we look at what we do to each other, and there's like this, and you see all these films that have come out, and you see, you know, and all these books about what, you know, what we're almost like in the Matrix film, where you're like a virus devouring, and of course, there are those elements in our nature, but I don't see our species like that at all. I think we're absolutely beautiful and wonderful species, and have the potential, the incredible potential, to sort of come somewhere close to what Buddha was talking about.
I totally agree, and I think those aspects that we've talked about, you know, the consuming, selfish, you know, using up the resources of the planet, disrespecting each other and other species and so forth, those are all aspects of our deluded nature.
Yeah.
Our delusions, like our anger, our attachment and hatred, jealousy and selfishness, can all be removed through meditation.
Yeah.
And then we would get very close, like you were saying, Paul, to the ideal that the Buddha showed, the enlightenment.
Yeah.
Because our fundamental nature, I agree with you, is pure, you know. Yeah. But we are by nature loving, kind, compassionate people.
Yeah.
But it's obscured by these other negativities.
Yeah.
But look, they're not an intrinsic part of our mind, so they can be removed.
Yeah.
And that's one of the aims of Buddhism, to do that.
You're listening to Preston FM 103.2. The voice of the people, for the people, by the people.
This outer world is a reflection of our inner world.
Yep.
If our inner world is hungry and full of desire for things,
yep.
that will then translate into a planet that's completely depleted of resources.
Yep.
So we can't disconnect the internal from the external.
Yep.
And can't think that the external is due to something else entirely.
No.
You know, it's like everything begins in the mind, our wishes, our thoughts, our ideas. Everything that we think and everything that we relate to will affect everything on the outside.
Although there's sort of great people like yourself and you know, who are trying to sort of say to people, no, listen, everybody just calm down a minute. It's to do love and peace and compassion. And they're all going, yeah, yeah, we know that, Pagpa. But listen, I'm going to have to rush because I've got to get some more money to pay all these bills and blah. You know, there are so many...
That is the danger. We've got so many distractions. Our lives are so busy and complicated.
It's just getting faster and faster, isn't it?
Yeah, but I think that's the reason why now we need to say, look, I need to take time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm on the hamster wheel.
Yep.
I'm going round and round and round.
And it's getting faster and faster.
It's getting faster and faster. Yep. I can't keep up. I'm going to die.
Yep.
And I'm going to get to the end of my life and I'm going to think, what was all that about?
Yep.
So now is the time to get some perspective. I need to stop.
Yeah.
And that would, like, maybe, you know, coming to a meditation class once a week, taking 2 hours a week out to think about things and get some perspective would make all the difference.
And when exactly do you hold the... Because you mentioned before that you don't close the doors here with respect to your practice. You don't have to become a Buddhist to meditate. So when... What are the contact details and with respect to...
Yeah, we have classes here at the centre on a Thursday evening at 7:30.
Yeah.
And also on a Saturday morning at 10:30.
And the number of this... So it's Westcliff?
Yeah, number 38 Westcliff.
Yeah, you can't really miss it. There's a great big...
Yeah, there's a big sign. Yeah. We're quite near the train station.
Right.
So everybody's welcome.
So that's every Thursday for...
Every Thursday at 7:30.
Yeah.
And every Saturday morning... At 10:30, and we have classes throughout Lancashire as well: Chorley, Croston, Leyland, Ormskirk, Blackburn. So we've got various classes throughout the region. If Preston doesn't suit, anyway, there's information on our website.
Oh, what is the website?
Yeah, it's www.meditatinglanx.org.uk.
Meditating Lanx.
Meditating Lanx. Yeah. .org.uk.
That's brilliant. Well, listen, that's been a fantastic conversation.
Likewise.
And
thank you for your insights.
Yeah, and thank you for your insights.
Mm.
And thank you very much, Pekpa.
Thanks a lot, Paul.
You take care, man.
Yeah, and you.
Well, I forgot to mention as well, Pekpa, you know, is there any particular songs that you would like us to play on the show here for the interview?
Yeah, there's a very beautiful piece of music that was written by my teacher called Geshe Kalsang Gyatso. And it's called Liberating Prayer.
Precious treasury of compassion, bestow.
That's it for this show. We hope you've enjoyed it. If you've got any comments, please email us at voiceofthepeople@preston.fm. Today we played Coldplay, God Put a Smile Upon Your Face, Faithless, God is the DJ, Joan Osborne, One of Us, Ali G, Religion, The Doors, Not to Touch the Earth, Pink Floyd, Set the Controls from the Heart of the Sun, Zeitgeist, Second Half of Religion, Ricky Gervais, Animals, Religion, David Gilmour, This Is Heaven, Elvis Presley, Take My Hand, Precious Lord, and The Liberating Prayer. So until next time, it's bye from me, Des Butler, and it's Tara from Paul O'Hara.
Praise the Lord!
Indeed. You've been listening to The Voice of the People.
With folded hands I turn to you.